Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from 970 ESPN and Steelers Nation Radio, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just a couple of Daves chilling, talking Steelers. Now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 6, Episode 129. I'm Dave Bryan from SteelersDepot.com, and sitting in for my co-host David Todd, as he has done all summer long, is Alex Kozura. Alex, happy Monday, happy week. The Steelers report to training camp week.
Same to you, Dave, and yep, I made my yearly trip to my Mecca, the Walmart near me, to load up all of my training camp supplies and all that good stuff, so... Yeah, this might be our last podcast before Friday's first day practice.
Yeah, we're going to, for all the listeners, we're going to kind of play it by ear. I haven't heard from David to see if David's going to be available for a podcast Friday. I don't want to tax Alex too hard that morning because he'll have to be going to La Trobe for the first practice on Friday. And then obviously when he's done later that evening, we will have a special, the first of many special edition podcasts later on Friday evening. So don't want to tax him too much there. Maybe we'll play it by ear. Maybe Alex and I will record one Thursday night to go up Friday to kind of cover the things that were said and weren't said when the team reports to La Trobe on Thursday there. So kind of give us a loose schedule here, if you will, come the end of the week here. Obviously, it's an exciting time. There's going to be quite a bit for these players to be interviewed and asked to talk about when they report to La Trobe on Thursday. And at the top of that list, obviously, will be Le'Veon Bell. And quite interesting development overnight, if you will, Alex, and props to you, even though nobody in the media or other blogs will give you credit for it. You were technically the first to have this up bright and early on Friday or on Monday morning. That is the fact that Le'Veon Bell commented on Instagram, and I'll kind of let you set it up and go from there.
Yeah, big hat tip to Instagram user V Naughty, who tagged me because I would have had no idea about it, and it was, I think it was like 4 o'clock in the morning he tagged me, and I saw it at like 6 a.m. But basically, there's just one of those, and if you're on Instagram or on the internet, you've seen some of those Photoshops going around. Someone has Laramie Tunsil's gas mask Photoshopped over Le'Veon Bell, and some commenter was saying, had tagged Bell and said some not nice things. You can imagine what they were, and Bell ended up responding, and this ends up being his first comment since the news came out, and he responds and says two separate things. He says, quote, "I'm not going to miss games, trust me." And then later on, there's a longer one. He says, "I'm going to win the appeal. People have no idea what happened, but don't worry. Let them hate. When I end up missing no games at all, people for sure are going to try to love me again, and I'm only riding with my loyal fans." So in Bell's mind, he's not going to miss any games.
And I guess it's pretty funny now. You go back to the podcast on Friday where I threw out that allegedly in there. And all along, I've tried, and I've learned this over the years, you know, whenever you kind of write about these reports and all, it's important to kind of disclaimer, and I think I've done that in several reports since, that even though the initial report by ESPN stated that Bell is scheduled to miss the first four games of the 2016 season for missing, you know, what now looks like multiple drug tests, the league has yet to confirm any of this. We did, however, have the NFL Network and Ian Rappaport tag onto this and say that it was indeed multiple tests. And, you know, I thought Mike Florio made an interesting point when he kind of recapped the whole, you know, Instagram thing with Bell this morning, of course, hours after you did. He said that, you know, that the league owns NFL media, okay? So the NFL media is responsible, or the parent company for Ian Rappaport in his report stating that Bell missed multiple tests. However, comma, the league has yet to come out and verify this and say, yes, indeed, Bell is going to be suspended for four games. Now, we have kind of been under the assumption all along that whatever has happened with Bell, he is appealing. With these missed drug tests, and God only knows how, if it's multiple, what led to this, what the gray area is on this. But it's, I mean, Bell's pretty emphatic here that he's not going to miss any time.
Yeah, I'm not sure what to make of it. Obviously, you know, the player's always going to say that he didn't do anything wrong and he's going to appeal, and we've heard guys that are confident in their appeal. Heck, even Martavis Bryant originally appealed. He would later drop it. Just to quickly bounce off your point about Florio, I thought the good point that he made was that typically, you know, the players have an expectation of confidentiality and privacy until the whole process is played through. And obviously we've seen with Bell and other players that they have not been afforded that, that this news leaks out before the legal process is through. So the league has just the worst privacy level around. It's bad. But more to the point and to the real question is, and this is...
Let's go back to the Mark Madden original rumor.
Okay.
To this. Okay. He claimed he got it from a team source.
Right. Yeah, he said that there was some insider. Yep.
So, you know, I mean, you want to talk about no privacy on... And if that is indeed the case, you won't talk about no privacy on any level, right?
Right. Yeah. No. Yeah. And that's what I mean. That happens. I mean, that's kind of, you know, reporters have a job, and this is what happens. But I just thought that it was the point, you know, Floyd was trying to make. And sure.
I'm agreeing with that. I'm just saying that you know, it doesn't stop at the league level.
Right.
Either.
Yeah. Right. It's all around. It's from the janitor to the front office guys. But more to the point, I guess. If Bell is able to win this appeal, or what is Bell's case? I think some people have speculated, and is it because maybe that he had post-surgery rehab things he had to do, and so he had to be in another area where he couldn't do the test? Would that be – that has to be the only thing that Bell could say, right?
Speculating on top of this gets even harder here, where I don't think a lot of us even fully understand the process. You know, to the best of my knowledge, if a player is in, you know, the substance abuse program, you know, they're obviously allowed to travel and live their life. But I think if they leave one area and go to another area, such as, let's say, Bell, who likes to go down to Miami and train at Dean Bomarito or Pete Bomarito's training facility down there in Miami, he, to my understanding, has to let the medical advisor or the testing company or somebody know how to get a hold of him down there. Now, let's say they wanted to surprise test him, which to my understanding, he can pretty much be tested
anytime,
you know, during the off season. Now with players not in the program, that starts back in the testing begins again, like what, August? Is it something like August? When players not in the substance abuse program can start being tested for marijuana and drugs. I'm not talking about PEDs, because obviously PEDs can be tested year round, right?
I believe so. You probably know some of the nuances better than I do, though.
Well, anyway, here's what I'm trying to say here is with Bell, he has to be ready, willing, and able at a drop of the hat to be tested. Mm-hmm. By an outside company. It's not a league. It's not the league that actually does this. It's a third party.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, did he not return a call? Did, you know, we could go into the whole Blues Brothers scene right here when Jake's begging for forgiveness. There was a terrible fire, a flood, locust, you know, that kind of thing. Who knows what kind of led to him allegedly missing not just one test, but more than a couple of tests here. He obviously feels he's got a good enough reason as to why he has allegedly missed these tests. And, you know, and it wasn't related to him just blowing off the test. So, you know, we'll see. We could speculate eight ways to Sunday, right?
Yeah.
And be wrong on all of them. He obviously made sure to point out on Instagram that none of us know the whole story here, and that's obviously true. But he's got a lot of conviction here, right? And this is the same Le'Veon Bell that a few weeks ago flatly denied, you know, that he was going to be suspended.
Yeah, he was very strong in his convictions. You know, it is a little weird though that there has not been one other report, because I'm sure the reporters have been trying to cover this every which way to figure out what happened. There's not been one report that says that Bell's camp feels confident in his appeal process, or, you know, X happened and they think that this can be the way that they can, you know, turn the suspension around. There's been no reports on that. If Bell hadn't said anything today, you know, we would have all been assuming still four games, you know, really, because, you know, it's so rare for a suspension to be completely overturned, you know. So I don't know when this is going to be done. Do you have any idea how long this appeal process can take and where he might stand?
I don't have a clue. I mean, all we know is, you know, or we think we know there's an appeal process going on, that it hasn't been finalized yet, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
And all we know is that the league has not come out and said Le'Veon Bell will miss the first four games of the 2016 season.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, that's where we are at this point.
Yeah.
So, do you have anything else to add on to that?
Well, just two quick things. One, if it is true, and I don't know why this became a story again, because Rappaport's original report was multiple tests, and then, like, the next day, all of a sudden, people started to actually focus on that. It was kind of weird. But if it is multiple tests, it's going to be hard, much harder for Bell to try to say that, you know, there was just a blip, an inconvenience, just kind of, you know, an oddity where he couldn't make it because of a rehab thing. If this happened three or four times, I'm sure the players that are in this program, and they're going to get scrutinized a lot more than players outside the program, have a duty to reasonably, you know, accommodate the NFL for these random tests. And so one time you might be able to make a case for it. You know, if it's two to three to four or however many, it's going to be a lot tougher to try to make that case. The other thing is, you know, we're right before camp. Camp's on Friday, and we're talking about all this stuff again. I know we have to, obviously. It's the biggest story, but you know me, and I'm sure you're in the same boat, and I'm sure Steeler fans are in the same boat. I just wish we could talk some football right now and all this off-field stuff we've gone through. It's just grates on you a little bit.
Well, yeah, and this is, I mean, I've made this comment several times before, and I think you have as well, too. But, I mean, I did not get into – I don't enjoy the blogging aspects of writing about legalities.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
You know, I mean, my mama didn't raise no lawyer.
Same here.
For sure. Nor did she raise a doctor. All right, now this interesting conversation has come up in the comments as well, too,
mm-hmm.
by one of the readers here I kind of got into a tiff with yesterday. What, you know, he's claiming, you know, this reader commenter saying the Steelers have this large investment in Le'Veon Bell that they should do everything in their power to make sure he doesn't miss these tests. This is a, you know, and he goes on to say he knows of several professional team owners that have players live with another player or have them live with the family, yada yada yada, to ensure that the player never, you know, miss tests or has a watchful eye on him all the time. How ludicrous is that?
Very, but he's not the first one to make that point. I think it was Jason McIntyre that was talking about his Tomlin on the hot seat because of these player suspensions, and, you know, it's been going, making its rounds about, is Tomlin responsible for this? No, in basically every way. And to that specific point about, you know, other teams have players live or that, look at Martavis Bryant. His mom, after that first four-game suspension, ended up living across the street from him to try to, you know, make sure he stayed on the straight and narrow. Obviously, it didn't work. You know, he went from four games to a year suspension. So just because you have people around you, you are accountable for your own actions. I know that Bell is still a younger guy, but it doesn't give you a pass. He's not even a rookie. He's been in the league. He knows the expectations. He knows how this process works. He knows what's on the line. So it's about personal responsibility and accountability. It's the off season. Tomlin can't sit there next to him, hold his hand the whole time, and say, Le'Veon, are you taking your tests? I mean, come on.
Do we even know if the team is notified, you know, when they try to schedule a test, a drug test with a player?
I'm sure they're.
I mean, to me, that's more of an issue between the testing company and the NFLPA and the player, right?
I mean, I would be really surprised if the team knew when the tests were coming. I think these tests are supposed to be surprises, and if you start telling the team, it's not going to be much of a surprise because word's going to get back to that player pretty quick. So I think teams get notified in advance when players are in jeopardy. You know, either the player tells them or the league tells them, because there's been reports the Steelers have known about something going on for, I think one report was back since the combine. Eventually the team knows, but the team doesn't have any advance notice. I wouldn't think so.
In other words, when someone from this drug testing company, what do they call these guys? Medical?
Yeah, I don't know.
They label it in the substance abuse policy, and I don't have it up right now. But regardless, when Le'Veon Bell's ping pong ball comes up in the comes up in the order here. You know, obviously he's called by somebody and sent an email or something along those lines that you have to report to so-and-so, or we'll come to you to test you. At that same time, would you think that the team is notified as well?
That's a good question.
And we don't know. We're speculating here either way.
I don't know, but even if they are, I mean – he's either going to pass the test or he's going to fail the test at that point, you know, because obviously they're doing this with very little notice. So if you have done drugs, if you smoked pot recently, you know, it's still going to be in your system within, you know, 12 hours or whatever the date is. The team's not going to be able to do anything anyway. So even if the answer is yes, and we don't know the answer to that, I mean, it doesn't change our opinions at all.
You know, this commenter's, you know, making it sound like the Steelers need to have somebody with Le'Veon Bell 24/7, you know, answering his phone for him, answering, you know, reading his emails and letting him know, okay, you got to go, it's time to go get in the car.
Yeah.
You know, you got to go get tested. Mm-hmm. And that's just, you just can't do that. It blows my mind to think that there's people out there that want to kind of pin this on the organization for Le'Veon Bell missing test.
The only
allegedly.
Right, allegedly. The only thing that you could say that would put some blame on the league, and this is just playing devil's advocate here because I have a response to counter it, but that, you know, if the team knew about Bryant's issues coming out of Clemson and Bell's issues, if he had any, coming out of Michigan State and still took that risk, you know, then you could say, well, the team knew that these guys had a history and there was a potential for this problem to come up. That would be the only thing that you could say, that you could say the team, you know, knew that and still drafted them anyway.
And then that's why you draft these guys in the fourth round.
Right.
That's why, you know, that's why probably why Martavis Bryant fell all that way, because of the risk involved. There were red flags, obviously, with Martavis Bryant. Nobody's running from that whatsoever. But, I mean, if you didn't draft every player that has smoked pot, you know, in their life, and I'm not being funny here. I mean, you know, what Jerome Bettis said a couple years ago that what 70 to 80% of the players in NFL smoke pot. You know, that's not a hard number. I mean, that's him speculating, obviously, but how many players coming out of college, what percentage do you think tried marijuana at some point during their time at college?
I mean, I'm sure it's a high number. Yeah, absolutely. There's no denying that. You have to weigh the risks of every player and learn about their background and their character. That's why the scouting process is vetted so much and so crazily. And again, even knowing that there were risks with Bryant and maybe there were risks with Bell, I mean, you know, the reward is so much worth it, where you get Bell, who ends up being, you know, the second best back in the league. You know, you tell me that if I get Bell, he's going to be the second best back in the league, and there's a 50-50 chance he's going to have all these suspensions and all these drug problems, I think I'm still going to roll that dice because I'm getting great talent. Martavis Bryant in the fourth round, that's a no-brainer. Even if Bryant doesn't play another down in Pittsburgh, that pick is basically still a success because of the value he brought to you in the short time he was around. So, you know, you have to weigh those risks, sure. But, you know, if you evaluate the talent properly and you know you're getting A-plus talent, it's totally understandable, and I bet you every other 31 teams would do the same.
And I think going back on Bell, I can't remember there being any huge red flags with him.
Right, but you always know there's, you know, behind the veil stuff.
Sure. And they're as you said, they're vetting these people. You know, the Steelers more than anybody are making sure to do background checks on these people. So, you know, but still, there comes a point in time where the risk axis meets the reward axis, right?
Right. And even if, let's say that Bell plays, you know, the rest of this year and the tag for next year, I mean, obviously, you know, if that's all he ends up doing, he plays, you know, this year, next year, and then his career in Pittsburgh's over, that's unfortunate because of what it could have been. But is it still not a great pick for Pittsburgh that you got the second most talented back in the league and you had a potent rushing attack? I mean, that's a good second-round pick.
And it's funny that you mentioned that because I wanted to kind of go that direction as well too. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's say Le'Veon Bell is suspended for the first four games of the 2016 season. Let's say for some, right now he entered after his first three seasons, he has 4,166 total yards from scrimmage. Let's say he adds another. What's a fair number of missing? Four games, how many total yards from scrimmage is a believable number for Bell in 2016 should he miss four games? 1,200?
Yeah, that's kind of – let's just go with 1,200, sure.
Okay, so that'll give him over 5,300 yards from scrimmage you know, during his four seasons with the Steelers. Now, obviously, he will have missed a ton of games in there. But even so – 5,400 total yards from scrimmage, more than makes that second round choice. Even if he was to walk away from that point, and let's say you didn't even get a compensatory pick for him, which obviously they will. But I mean, the pick is validated.
Yeah, and the kicker here is there was no big money investment in that. There was a rookie contract with very small guaranteed money, so it's not like you put, you know, a long-term deal into this guy, and then you found out all the problems he had, and then he got suspended for four games or whatever. So, I mean, you got the second-best back in the league for dirt cheap for rookie contract. It's not – again, you're missing out on what could have been, but what you got was still pretty good and for cheap.
Absolutely, and people think sometimes that you can only measure a draft pick by the whether or not they get a second, you know, how long they play. But the fact of the matter is, I mean, look around the league. I mean, you've done well if you re-sign two from a draft class.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, obviously you want these first-rounders to hit, and obviously you want them to be given their fifth-year option and then signed to a long-term deal. And for the most part, the Steelers have been great in that aspect. Sands, Ziggy Hood, mm-hmm. Rashard Mendenhall, mm-hmm. right? I mean, and you're not going to hit them all.
Right. Yeah, no, I mean, yeah, Bell still turned out to they evaluated the talent clearly correctly, more so than anybody else did, and they got that production at the NFL level. So, I mean, again, you're disappointed from the long-term future of it, but it's still – I think it's still going to be a good pick, you know, regardless of how this ends up playing out.
Now, obviously, we hope Bell and his statement, you know, late Sunday night, early Monday morning, ends up being true, and he doesn't miss, you know, any games whatsoever. Then he'll definitely have the old point the finger, say I told you so, and you want to talk about having a chip on his shoulder at that point? He certainly will more than anybody here. But, I mean, anybody listening, you know, listeners listening to this, how in God's green earth can you – I mean, I want to hear. I mean, send us an email of how you think any of this goes back on the Steelers you know, and how they probably should keep somebody, you know, basically what this reader was trying to say was they have all this money invested in him that they need to make sure that he doesn't miss these tests. Anybody want to try to logically back that up? I'm all open to hear from you. I'm all ears. Send me an email. Let me know also what you think. If you think Le'Veon's going to end up being right on this, I put a poll up on Twitter this morning, and something like what 75% still don't, you know, believe Bell. So
because I think the toughest part is, although we understand, you know, in a court system it's innocent until proven guilty. I mean, the NFL has already apparently come down and said that he's guilty. So now Bell has to work, you know, now he has the burden of proof to overturn that and to combat the things that the league said. So he's working right now from a position of weakness. You know, whenever this first happens and it's first investigated, the NFL has the burden of proof that they have to prove that Bell was in the wrong here. Now that's the appeal process. It's going to be a lot tougher for Bell to overturn that. That's why it's rare for these suspensions to be wiped out. It's happened before, but it is very rare.
You know, at some point, I guess my whole rant here trying to end this topic here is that these guys are grown men. You draft them. You cannot babysit mm-hmm. these guys 24/7, send somebody down with them to Miami, hover over him, take him to his workout, sit out there in the parking lot, make sure he doesn't come out and and smoke or you can't do that. Mm-hmm. I mean, somebody tried to point me to Dez Bryant and what the Cowboys may or may not be trying to do with him. Good luck with that. Dez Bryant's going to do what he wants to do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
and these players are as well.
Right. I mean, I know that Bell, people say, well, Bell's a young guy, but when does Bell become old enough that he gets to take care of himself? I mean, the shelf life for an NFL is typically 30. So, I mean, you can't wait till he's 29 and say, okay, now he's the savvy veteran that can handle things on his own. It's different in the NFL. You know, if there was any other situation, you know, you don't blame the parent who's doing the best they can for a kid that gets in trouble in just any situation, you blame the kid. You know, it's his own, you know, if he's an adult, it's his own personal responsibility. It's his own fault. You have to own the consequences. Now, again, we'll see what happens with Bell. Bell seems very confident. He's not going to miss any games. Steelers Nation hopes that's true. My last question, at least on Bell, let's say that he wins his appeal and he gets, you know, he's playing all 16 games this year. What does that do to his long-term future? How does that change it from where we were, you know, the last podcast saying that he has no long-term future in Pittsburgh? How does that change that in your mind?
Well, the thing for starters is, and I don't think we're ever going to know this, is what were the
reasons?
What were the parameters that led to him missing these tests?
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, was it, you know, we don't know. Mm-hmm. And I think it would still kind of, look, I mean, if he's not,
it's tough. It's tough.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand. Yeah.
Because there's so many you know, look, our job, people might not like it, but it's our job to kind of speculate on this kind of thing and what might happen with his contract and franchise tag and all like that. You know, if he's not suspended and there is a valid reason for him missing these tests, whatever that valid reason might be, then I think I think there's still a possibility he could get, you know, at worst a franchise tag next year.
Yeah. Yeah. I haven't really thought about it a ton, so maybe my answer will change, but I rarely go with this approach. But I think in that situation where if Bell gets a suspension rescinded to nothing, you just basically have to trust the team. Whatever they do, you're going to assume that that's the correct action because they're the ones that are going to have all the information, and they're the ones that are going to know exactly how Bell got himself into this spot. And it's just really hard for us to say otherwise to it. So, you know, I think in that situation, you just have to trust. You know, if they give him a long-term deal, then that must mean that there must have been a good enough reason for, you know, that they were comfortable with to understand why Bell got suspended but then had it rescinded, you know, the circumstances of that. So it's almost, and I rarely say it because I hate this argument, but I think you just have to go with what the team ends up going with.
You know, and some of these reports are stipulating that the Steelers have known about this for a while, mm-hmm. which you would think obviously they would, and that maybe a lot of this goes back to what? How far back?
Well, there was the one report, like I said, that the team knew at the combine that he was going to be in trouble.
That, you know, and look, they, I mean, they obviously aren't going to comment on it, on something that's still a league matter right now.
Right.
The poll I put up on Twitter this morning, do you believe Le'Veon Bell's statement that he won't miss any Steelers games this season? Over 700 votes, Alex, 75% of my followers on Twitter chose no.
Well, again, I think that's, you know, there has not been any other reports to come out that said, you know, how Bell could win his appeal or that his camp is confident or that the team is confident in this. It could happen. I mean, I'm, you know, we're not going to stick our hand in the cookie jar again because we've been, you know, getting all this misinformation and all this, you know, one side and the other side. So, but my thought right now is that, you know, just statistically speaking, it's so rare for an appeal to be overturned. It's hard to think that it will be, but we'll just have to wait and see.
Should he meet the media on Thursday?
I mean, doesn't he have to? Can he opt out? I mean, isn't there a rule that you have to be available to the media?
I don't know of I don't know to what level. I assume he probably does.
I mean, for the team's sake, it's best if he doesn't talk. But
if I'm Bert, I keep that kind of real short, right?
Yeah, find the back entrance to St. Vincent. Don't come in the front way.
It'll be, well, I mean, because look, I mean, what's going to be more dominating now, Le'Veon Bell talking to the media or James Harrison?
Yes, to your classic answer. My advice to Bell is to borrow my McLumina and be very undercover when you come into camp. Don't come in a flashy car, drive the McLumina back entrance to St. Vincent, and maybe you'll avoid the media.
Well, they're definitely going to get to him. If they don't get to him on Thursday, they'll get to him on Friday, or you know, they're going to get to him sooner or later. But it should be entertaining nonetheless. Speaking of James Harrison, the league announced via a statement this morning that Peyton Manning has been cleared as part of this Al Jazeera investigation. And they made sure to point out the fact that the Mannings, i.e. Peyton Manning and his wife Ashley, have cooperated fully with the league throughout this entire process, and that they will now look forward to interviewing the other four players named in this thing, of which James Harrison is one of them. But kind of leaving off where we were the other day, it doesn't look like any of these players are planning to meet, right?
No, I think that I haven't heard like Clay Matthews or Julius Peppers or Mike Neal say that they're not it sounds like they're going to talk to them, right? Have you heard? I mean, I know the union.
Well, didn't they all release affidavits?
Well,
though?
They did, but obviously the league rejected that. So I don't know. I mean, I haven't heard the union respond to the NFL statement that they're rejecting the affidavits and they're still going to proceed and talk to these guys. So I guess it's up in the air, but certainly none of them have come out as hard against the league as James Harrison has.
Well, Thursday is the day that the league wanted to speak with James Harrison. Now the Packers report early, right?
Right,
today?
I think so. The league said that Mike Neal is going to be the first guy that they're going to talk to, I think, because the Packers report first. So we'll see what comes from that, I guess. That might be, you know, we'll see how the league handles that. That kind of will give James Harrison an idea of what to expect, I guess.
Yeah, so we should know, by Friday whether or not James Harrison has obliged and granted the league their interview.
But if we find out, and we'll find out, I'm sure that Mike Neal and these other guys talk to the league, there's no way James Harrison can then not talk to the league. I mean, that would be all the evidence the league needs, just in the sense of not cooperating with the investigation. That would be the worst.
Right. If these other three meet with the league, you know, James would look, you know, like he's trying to hide something at that point.
It'd be best if Harrison could have gone first, and he could have, if he wanted to say no, which I still wouldn't advise, but if he wanted to say no, then he, you know, the league couldn't say, well, these other guys talked to him, because it would have happened after the fact. So, you know, what happens to Mike Neal and them is very important for James Harrison's case, and what would be the best thing for Harrison to do come Thursday, I guess it would be.
Could James Harrison meet with him and just plead the fifth?
I imagine that's what James Harrison would probably do if he was forced to talk to him, is just kind of say, it's all in the affidavit, go look at that.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Could he answer every question, please see my affidavit?
Yeah, I think that's a very James Harrison thing to do, and that seems probably – I don't expect James Harrison to be forthcoming at all in this interview. And honestly, from the beginning, you know, I said that, you know, as long as you meet, you don't have to be nice to these guys. I mean, you can, you know, you can tell them off and tell them that they're wrong. But if James Harrison goes this route and does not really give much of an interview, the league can still get him in that did not cooperate fully thing. So it becomes more of a gray area there, more of a mess. But that's not going to necessarily, you know, to use the now late Denny Green quote, it's not going to let him off the hook.
You know, I mean, regardless, if he does meet with him, he's not going to get – I mean, they're going to be short answers,
yeah,
probably one or two words.
Yeah.
I mean, should that fall under the category of not cooperating?
The league will – yes, I'm pretty positive that they will still make the case that he did not fully cooperate. That will probably be their exact words because showing up does not qualify.
I think if they get him to show up, that's enough cooperation in my mind, to be quite honest. I mean, what do they really expect a guy like James Harrison to do? And especially if stemming from these allegations, which he's flatly denying, how elaborate of an answer can you give?
It's all in the league's control, and their not so subtle dig today was talking about how the Mannings were fully cooperative, and that's, you know, it's probably a good reason why the league is just letting it go. It does make me wonder though, if Manning's clean and he was the headline, you know, act in this report, why is the league still pursuing all these other guys? I know that they said they have different sources and witnesses and stuff, but I mean, if they determine Manning is clean and Harrison's name was mentioned once, I think, in that whole report, why are they still pursuing it? But that's a question we will not, I'm sure, find out an answer to.
Well, like we said, at some point here, hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we won't have to talk about this Bell thing or the James Harrison thing. Hey, Marquise Pouncey and his twin brother had a birthday yesterday. We haven't heard anything about that.
Yeah, so the quietest time, because every year we hear about the Pouncey party and we're always like, oh no, hopefully nothing bad happens. But
even if it did, it's been run off of the front page or back page or what have you.
Maybe this is all a conspiracy. Maybe Bell's doing a Pouncey a solid or something. All right, I got you.
we'll wait to see if there was any fallout from. I don't know. Did the Pouncey twins even broadcast and put the posters up this year? You know,
I didn't see any.
That it was going to be some sort of basher. Yeah. You know.
I did not see any. So let's hope not. I'm sure.
Yeah, normally it's funny. It's always this time of year that we're always gripping about something right before the start of camp. All right. Shall we talk? Shall we actually talk about training camp now? Do we have anything else that's really not X's and O's and football kind of related?
All I want to do is talk football, and I am so game for that. So let's get to it.
We kind of left off. We talked about the tackle positional group on Friday. We'll wind things up today. We're talking about the interior group. Marquise Pouncey is, of course, part of that interior group, and after missing the entire 2015 season with a broken fibula and infections and, well, you name it, this guy evidently went under the knife quite a bit last offseason, or last year during the season, appears to be raring and ready to go, practiced, as far as I can tell, as much as earthly possible during the offseason. Boy, it'll be great to have Marquise Pouncey back, right?
Yeah, fantastic. I'm excited to see how he's going to move, how, you know, he'll look like the old Pouncey. I mean, you hope and you kind of think, but, you know, when you have seven surgeries like that, you know, you never know for sure, and no one knows. Pouncey doesn't know, the team doesn't know until you go out there and do it. So I'm just excited to see how he moves again, if he's that easy, you know, fluid mover that he's been. I would expect him, and the team's already basically said it, they're going to very much monitor his snaps and reps during camp and in preseason games, so he might be an every other day kind of guy, or, you know, I mean, he'll get his fair share of rest regardless. So you're not going to see him out there every day. And maybe even early on, because, you know, once the first couple practices come in and you're going pretty hard, I'm sure you might get some soreness and, you know, the knee might not feel great because it's the first time you've really exerted yourself since basically, you know, for a whole year. So don't be alarmed when you pounce, you get some days off. It's all part of the plan.
Yeah, and even though he'll try to avoid those, I mean, he should take them if given them.
I mean, he has no choice in the camp.
Right.
Yeah, no choice.
Right, especially if he's feeling any kind of discomfort or fatigue or anything along those lines. Because even though he was able to go through most of it last year in part of the preseason here, I mean, look, he has nothing to prove here. Neither do David DeCastro or Ramon Foster. I think the only thing about Ramon Foster is, you know, you kind of worry sometimes maybe about the conditioning, but he's a bigger guy. We've said it all, several times over the years with Ramon Foster, not a guy you're going to pull and run that power with to the right-hand side four, five, six times a game. You might do it once, maybe twice, but he's not a guy that's the most athletic specimen in the world. More than anything, his value is his experience. His value, especially with that experience being alongside Alejandro Villanueva, the guy is smart as a whip, a leader of that line, and really the only drawbacks are the ones I pointed out is mobility, right?
Yeah, right. The more often than not, they'll pull him just to create that false key to get those linebackers to come up, always respect the run, and then you can try to, you know, throw the ball off of that. To the conditioning point, I mean, I've never seen an issue, but if anyone is concerned, you know, he did a Q&A on Twitter the day of Bell's suspension news, and he said he's in the best shape of his life. He gave credit to his trainer, so that's always great to see. I know players always say that they're in the best shape of their life, but if there's any concern there. But the big thing for him is just to get those reps with Villanueva, because you didn't get a lot of them last year in camp, obviously, because it was still Kelvin Beachum show. So you want to just continue to pick up where you left off last year with communication. Stunt pickup's going to be big for them, working, you know, learning how to work on the same level and pass things off. That was an issue for most of last year. It did get better a little bit, but it was an issue. So, you know, those are the big things you look for. Working your combo, you know, your zone rules when you combo block. They run that basically every day. They run stunts almost every day. So, just really, you know, be on the same page with your left tackle.
And when you talk about DeCastro, you talk about a guy that's really a Joe Thomas at guard. He's really more now he does have some athleticism. Obviously, he's absolutely fun, fantastic to watch on that Georgia Power. You know, when he's asked to pull to the left hand side, and they'll do that. You know, depending on game situations, of course. You know, five, six times a game. You know, with him, pass protection probably can be considered maybe the weakest part of his game. He does have his kryptonite around the league as well, too, and it's hard not to call Geno Atkins it at this point, right?
Yeah, Geno's still one of the best, and he's a tough guy who'll line up on your outside shoulder every time, and you got to figure out if he's staying outside or if he's going to give you a little outside-in kind of move. He's a handful, absolutely. But no major watch with DeCastro. Maybe, you know, handle the bull rush a little bit better. Stay on your feet in the run game. I went back through my notes. I kind of had that several times where sometimes he would lose his footing. But DeCastro's going to be fine and no issues there.
Kind of hard to argue that this isn't one of, if not the best, interior three in the league.
I'm always bad at trying to say that because I always forget about
top five.
It's right up there though. It's not going to be the weakness of this team, assuming Pouncey's, you know, good to go and playing like the old Pouncey again. So it'll be a strong unit for sure.
Backing up or presumably entering camp as the backup at center is Cody Wallace. Look, no, nobody's going to try to paint Cody Wallace for anything more than what he is. He's a mauler more than he is anything else. And, you know, as I pointed out way back to when he was initially, you know, signed with the Steelers. Yes, he can play guard. Just because a player can play guard doesn't mean he's good at it. Center is far and away Cody Wallace's best position. And even that, he's got his, He's got his drawbacks at the position, as was evidenced last year, but the Steelers won with Cody Wallace. They did not lose in the playoffs because of Cody Wallace, in my opinion. He can get the job done. I would just, you know, it's unfortunate to say, I would much rather see him at center, God forbid, than I would guard.
Yeah, there's certainly a fan club for Dr. Cody Wallace, and I get that because he's a nasty guy and he goes hard. And, you know, I know there's a lot of O-line guys out there that love the kind of the style that he plays, but he gets, you know, and he did get better last year. The first month was really, really tough for Cody Wallace, and I will give him credit for kind of, you know, leveling out a little bit. But when you look at the broad numbers last year, he led, according to our charting, he led the team in sacks. He allowed 6. He led the team in penalties, 12. That includes the postseason. I believe he had 10 or 11 in the regular season. So obviously some of those penalties were dumb ones at the end of plays and, you know, taking those personal fouls that you just can't do. But you lead the team in sacks, you lead the team in penalties, usually you're going to be the scapegoat.
It's a lot of his problems, too, are gap kind of responsibilities.
Yeah, he just struggles laterally, struggles with counters. Guys set him up one way and go the other. Just struggles to kind of, you know, be able to stay square and mirror guys in pass protection. Now, I want to see him go one-on-one with Javon Hargrave, you know, the veteran, you know, slower guy versus the athletic kind of, you know, young guy. That'll be really fun to see how that battle goes.
All right, kind of trickling through this thing, B.J. Finney, Chris Hubbard, that should be one heck of a battle during training camp. In fact, I kind of expect one of those guys to make it and one of them not to. I would be, even though Chris Hubbard has experience as an interior guy, I mean, where are we most likely? I mean, he's played tackle too. Are we going to see him play up and down the line during training camp in the preseason, or do you think they're going to shove him inside and see if they can make him a center slash guard? Let's talk about this battle.
It's going to be a fun one to watch, and I want to give Hubbard his credit, like I said, for making this team the last 2 years when most of us, myself included, didn't think so. To answer your question, I think he's going to be mostly an interior guy because they already have their tackle set. Maybe when their roster goes down to 75, and for that last preseason game, they play Hubbard around a little bit more because they don't have the bodies like they do when they have their 90-man roster. But I would anticipate him being an interior guy, maybe left guard, center, you know, more than playing tackle in the preseason.
And with Finney, we just didn't get to see a lot of him last year. And if memory serves me, we saw more of him at right guard than anything else, right?
Right. He was at right guard last year. I didn't think he had a particularly good camp. He was a little disappointing to me. But you do understand that he's a rookie, and sometimes your head's going to swim, and you're not going to get to play fast because of it. So now, you know, this year, you know, you can't use that as an excuse. You know the system. You know the expectation level. You know how to go through training camp and what the process is. So I want to see him play faster. I want to see him that he's understanding what's going on better, just because I didn't think he was really what I expected coming out of Kansas State, because I was a big fan of B.J. Finney coming out of Kansas State, but it, you know, it just didn't really come to fruition in Pittsburgh.
And his best position is center, right?
That's his most experienced, but he's played a little bit everywhere. He's played right guard before. He's even played some right tackle. I remember in the bowl game, his last game against UCLA, he played right tackle in the second half when their guy went down. So he's shown some versatility. I don't know what the Steelers want to do with him. I don't know if they're going to think that he could get some reps at tackle. My guess is probably not, because they want to have him focus on playing center or guard. But there is a little bit of a background there that is interesting.
We fully expect him to get some center snaps, though, more than he did last year, right?
I think just because
what does it mean if he doesn't get a lot? Let's phrase it that way. What does it mean if during camp in the preseason he doesn't get a lot of center snaps? Is that anything to be worried about?
Well, it just depends. Are other guys moving around and he isn't, or if everyone else is kind of staying in the spot? Then it might not mean as much for Finney. Now these guys are going to move after the first week. The first week, everyone's going to stay in their spot, then they're going to start moving around. So check week two and see, does he go right guard to center, or does he go right guard to left guard, and kind of see where they think he works best at. So I think week two, when they start moving guys around, that's going to be a big tell for B.J. Finney.
And once again, we think it's going to be an either-or between Finney and Hubbard, right?
Yeah, I don't see them. Because if they keep both, that'll give them 10, right, on the roster? That was not the math.
I don't want to go there.
But, yeah, I think it's an either-or situation.
All right, what do you know about Quentin Schooley?
Yeah, he was a guy that showed some good things on tape coming out of NC State. He's an undersized guy, but he does play with good technique. He'll have to do that in the NFL because he's going to be the smaller guy, the undersized guy, probably the underpowered individual. So you're going to have to see a strong lower half and a good base. You know, we'll see how he handles some of the big guys. You know, he's going to take on Daniel McCullers a couple times here, one-on-one. Not easy to do, but can you hold your own? Can you show a couple glimpses that kind of shows that you belong in this league? I expect him to probably work third-team center, and you know, we'll get to know Quentin Schooley.
Cole Manhart.
He was a left tackle at Nebraska Kearney. I think he played there all 4 years. Was very accomplished, but you know, as soon as he was ready to go to the NFL, he knew right away that he was going to move inside to guard. He was with Philadelphia for a brief time. Now he's in Pittsburgh. I expect him to be a third-team left guard, and that's kind of really, you know, all that we really know about Cole Manhart. You know, we'll see if he can show up a little bit, and we'll see if he gets to move around, have any versatility. But as I wrote, my expectations, conditioning for all these big young guys is so key, because it's going to be hot out there. You're going to be, you know, going so hard. You got to be able to make it through practice. The way you start, it has to be the way that you finish. And you know, this will be, you know, you'll find out right away what guys are conditioned and what guys aren't.
Any chance whatsoever Cody Wallace does not make this final 53?
I think it's really slim. I can't envision a scenario where they go so young, you know, in terms of their backups, unless they really think that Hubbard could be the next guy up at center. I just don't see it happening. But the other quick point I wanted to make, Dave, is I think they're going to still add a lineman before camp because they only have 14 right now after releasing Mike Adams. And I've looked back for, I think, the last, since 2011, so that'd be, what, the last 4 or 5 years, they've always had 15 guys. Right now they're at 14. I don't have a third-team right guard for them. So don't be surprised if you see somebody new come in right before camp.
Could we run into us? Now, look, they showed a little bit of interest in some veteran center/guards, right, during the offseason?
I think they all got signed, though.
Right, right. But, I mean, they might not stay signed.
Right, right.
You know, and I guess what I'm saying is, could you envision a situation where, you know, maybe, you know, we talk all along, it's going to be Chris Hubbard or B.J. Finney. Could we run into a situation where it's neither?
I don't discount that, but I think they like Hubbard, considering they've kept him on the roster the last 3 years. Obviously, they like Finney. He was reported to get paid handsomely on the practice squad last year, so I think they want to try to develop one of those guys, and I think they like the versatility that Hubbard has. So I don't say anything's impossible, but I think it's going to be one of Hubbard or Finney.
Which way are you leaning on that one?
I've been leaning Hubbard, just because for the last 2 years I've said this guy's not going to make the team. In the last 2 years, this guy's made the team, and he's played some NFL snaps, and he has not embarrassed himself. So I think eventually, you know, the whole definition of insanity, you do the same thing over and over again and expect a different result. We'll see how it goes. It's a very fluid situation, but it's hard not to give Chris Hubbard his credit because he's earned it.
And I'm leaning towards Finney. I really look forward to watching him get a lot of snaps during the preseason. I think when the dust settles at the end of 4 preseason games, he could be one of these guys that are up there on the team leaders of snaps played.
Yeah,
during the preseason.
Definitely, definitely.
All right, anything else to add about interior offensive line?
Nope, that's it. Like I said, I did the article today. I think that they could add somebody because it would be very, very strange for them to come in with just 14 linemen and really 13 knowing that Marquise Pouncey is going to kind of be, you know, a guy that's going to get a lot of rest. So there's always pup guys that happen, and, you know, that team always makes roster moves right before the start of camp. So check out that article because I think there's a chance it could happen.
All right, any kind of final nuggets? Which way do you want to go in the final few minutes here?
Well, going back to Bell for 2 seconds here, kind of indirectly related. Even if Bell did something wrong, he still has not earned the stupidest NFL player of the week. That award goes to Aldon Smith, allegedly, if that's true, for what appears to be a Periscope video of him smoking a blunt and talking about how his name is Aldon Smith. And while he's on a year-long suspension for substance abuse issues. So that's a new one to me.
You can't fix stupid,
that's
can
the
you?
The old Ron White joke, yep. and that's the epitome of it.
These guys, look, if you social media is so dangerous. You know, look, I understand. I think obviously some of these players handle it better than others. If not, you know, why not have somebody like Ben Roethlisberger does have has somebody that runs their social media account, mm-hmm. you know, for them. Your time in the NFL is so limited, and I understand how some fans like to have the connection. And Antonio Brown probably does it better than anybody on the Steelers, you know, as far as the way they handle their social media accounts. But man, sometimes nothing good can come out of some of this stuff. And if you act, look, you know what happens even with me sometimes is that, you know, I'll have my Twitter direct messages come through mm-hmm. or come through my actual direct messages on my iPhone, just so I know every time I get one. Well, if I accidentally reply mm-hmm. via my direct message alert instead of going into my phone's Twitter account, if I reply, say, to you on and I've done this before, if I reply via the direct message app, it'll automatically post on my Twitter feed.
Yeah, you get some very out of context tweets.
Right. It is like, what the heck is Dave tweet about there? I mean, I like to think I try to stay on top of this as much as the next person, and I make mistakes.
I've had conversations with you, and then I've seen the anticipated reply to me, but it goes to Twitter, and then I'm like, okay, all right, I know Dave's response now, and so does the rest of the world.
Yeah, it's a good thing I'm not talking bad about you, or you don't that you don't see that, you know. And ditto for you. Make sure if you're going to talk bad about me, Alex, I never find out about it.
Of course.
All right, we'll see how the rest of the week goes as far as these show schedules go. I'll get a hold of Dave and see if maybe he wants to do something Friday. If not, maybe Alex and I will do something, tape it Thursday night to go up Friday after the players have reported to Latrobe. Alex, you will obviously be heading out there starting on Friday. And what is it? Is it 14 practices this year? 15 practices?
14 open practices. A couple of walkthroughs to get closed off, but 14 open practices.
And obviously we'll be doing all the charting during the preseason games. We absolutely cannot wait for that. We can't wait to start breaking down some of this. Your daily reports will be on par as usual, the best that probably anybody will find. So please stay tuned to SteelersDepot.com for those as the week progresses. We'll be breaking down these news conferences after they happen throughout the week. The PUP list should be known by Thursday afternoon as well. Folks, you can follow me on Twitter at Steelers Depot. You can follow my co-host David Todd on Twitter at David M. Todd. Follow Alex Cazora at Alex_Cazora. Follow the show at Terrible Podcast. If you want to email and some of the things that we talked about earlier in the show about Le'Veon Bell, do so, theterriblepodcast@gmail.com. If you want to donate to the site, go to SteelersDepot.com. You'll find a donate button. If you want a last-minute donation for Alex's trip to Latrobe this year, you can go to SteelersDepot.com and look on the right-hand side of the of any post, and you'll see the GoFundMe account badge, and you can click on that and do it securely as well, too. Several donations have come in last week. We'll try to hit on these at the start of training camp and thank everybody all at one time. Ooh, that's a mouthful. And as always, thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.